The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So those of you who were here last week, I know that there was a question about the relationship of Buddhism to God, and the person who asked is not here. Oh, there you are. Okay. And I said tonight that I would talk a little bit about the topic. But I thought that before I talk about Buddhism and the issue of God, that perhaps you would help me along a little bit by letting me know why this interests you. Because I know that Jeff is interested because he asked the question, but last week I said one of the reasons I don't talk about this topic much, I didn't think people would be interested. And then I asked how many people were interested, and this overwhelming majority raised their hands with enthusiasm. I was a bit surprised. So I'd be curious to find out, before I give my talk, why is this such an interesting topic? So we have... Oh, no.
I'd just like to hear your opinion on it.
If I gave a talk on Buddhism and monetary policy, that would that'd be okay too?
That would also be of interest.
Anything I have to say? Okay. In the back there.
Personally, I find myself just within my family and friends. They're coming from a theological, you know, place where there is the belief in God, and that's I come from a tradition that comes that approaches that issue as well, or comes from that theological position as well. So, I've been practicing for about a year, and I find myself benefiting greatly from it, and I often find myself unable to explain the benefit or the position of mindfulness and Buddhism. And so anything you can say that might help to...
In those conversations.
Yeah, in those conversations that can get a bit tense and awkward. And so any comments around that?
Because you're involved in Buddhism, has kind of left the theistic fold. And so it kind of feels kind of people feel like you're kind of doing something you shouldn't be doing. Okay. I once, I was a TA at Stanford for an undergraduate class in Buddhism, and there was this freshman from Kentucky, and she looked pretty innocent to the world. And I mentioned in the discussion that from a Buddhist point of view, you can be a Buddhist and a Christian at the same time. And her eyes went wide. Like, this is a radical idea, because people think that Buddhism and people think that in the West with Christianity and Judaism and Islam, you kind of have to belong to one and not the other. This idea of belonging to religion is so centrally important, and Buddhism doesn't have that kind of idea of exclusivity. From a Buddhist point of view, it's fine to belong to different religions. It's almost as if Buddhism is a different domain of life than the kind of domain of life that people are belonging to Christianity and Judaism. And so you don't really care too much if your dentist is Republican or Democrat, right, if it's a really good dentist. So if it's a really good path to liberation, you don't care, Is it Buddhist or is it Christian? It doesn't really matter from a Buddhist point of view. So a couple of more. Why do you want to hear about this topic of God?
Two now. My interest is that I've had friends from different Buddhist, I don't know if sect is quite the right word, but like someone was into Amitabha Buddhism if that's called a Buddhism, but it's, you know, that was a god, and then we've read, or you, people have told stories of Buddha that had, he had powers where he was flying through the air and seeing into people's minds, and that sounds godlike. And I guess I would be interested just in a little clarity that, you know, we're coming from one little slice of Buddhism where Buddha doesn't seem to be a god at all, but Buddhism is kind of like Christianity. There's all these different flavors, and I just, for clarity's sake, it'd be interesting to understand where is Buddha more godlike or not godlike, and where, and
okay, thank you. Let's see.
In our household, if you were to ask if any of us believed in God, the 50-somethings would say yes, and the 20-somethings would declare they were atheist, largely. And I don't know, but I suspect that the apparent polarities that you might fill this territory in, and that there's actually much more that connects us than seems on the face.
Mm-hmm. So then you might ask in your family, the 50-year-olds and the 20-year-olds, what function does believing in God or believing in atheism have? What's the function? It's right behind you.
I almost hesitate to say this. Last week, when you asked the question if we wanted to hear it, I was a minority of one, I think, who didn't. I've been showing up on Monday night for so long, I heard you give this once, and it seemed to me that it was.
I don't remember.
Yeah, you did. I think we were probably over in the Friends,
uh-huh.
You know, on Lewis Road, off Lewis Road.
Okay.
Didn't seem to me that either your heart was in it or anybody else was. It just always seemed to me an irrelevant topic. But I've been coming here for so long for Mondays that I just show up anyway.
but you almost didn't come today.
It's Monday, so if I'm in town, I'm going. And I think I remember you saying, well, there are four things you must never ask a Buddhist. One, do you believe in God? Two, do you believe there's no God? And three, do you not believe in God? And four, do you not believe in God? So, it seemed to me that for all of us, God was sort of irrelevant to Buddhism. But go for it.
Okay, well, that little kind of encouragement. So, the topic is the relationship of Buddhism to God, the God notion of God, the idea of God. And it's a difficult topic to talk about for a variety of reasons. One is, the primary one is that it's so hard to decide what God is. There are so many different definitions or ideas about God that sometimes I wish humanity would just drop the word and come up with some other word, some other definition, because when people use the word God, many times people assume that they're talking about the same thing, when they're very radically different, all the different ideas that people have. And down through history, there have been, like certainly in the West, in Christianity and Judaism and Islam, a whole history of the development and evolution of the concept of God that historians can write, kind of the natural history of God and the ideas of it. And you have gods in Hinduism, and most religions have had gods. Most people in the world believe in God, but what do they believe? And I don't know, you know, I've read a little bit of this topic. It seems to me that it might be two very broad definitions of God. One is that God that has some qualities of being a person, some kind of looks a little bit like a human being. It's kind of anthropocentric kind of view of God, where the God is a being that has intelligence, being that has powers, being that is able to perceive and see what's going on, and a being that's able to intentionally create things, to create the worlds for us. And the Old Testament particularly shows that this being in the Old Testament has a lot of emotions as well. And so you can get this emotional life of God, which is very interesting to write about because it was so rich back then. And then you have, so that's all kind of the, what I would call maybe the anthropocentric idea, the idea that of a being. And then there's all kinds of ideas about God where God is not a being, but rather more like a principle or a pervasive reality or a force that exists somehow in nature or in reality in the universe. And so, you know, commonly, not, I don't know how common, but some people have defined God as love, the force of love. Some people define God as the interconnectedness between people or between everything. And somehow in the nature of that interconnectedness, you find God. You know, I'm not so conversant about all these different principles or forces that people will attribute to God. But there are many. And so when you talk about what's the relationship of Buddhism to God, you're talking about the anthropocentric God or the idea of a God as a principle that permeates the universe. That's an open question. In terms of most people, however, when they talk about God, without any further explanation, I think that they, especially if God has a capital G, they have the idea of a creator God, someone who has created this universe that we're in. And so does Buddhism have anything comparable to a creator God? And it does not. However, Buddhism does have, down through the ages, down from the very beginning, the notion of gods in the plural. In Indian languages, they're called devas, usually. Some other words for them as well. And there's a pantheon of gods. There's many, many layers, 26 or 33 different layers of heavens. Each of these heavens has a different kind of... kinds of gods that live in them. The closer the heavenly realms are to the world, our earth, the coarser the gods are, the shorter their lifetimes, and the higher up you go, further away, more ethereal they get. More trouble hearing? You're okay? Okay. The higher up you go in these realms, the more ethereal and formless these gods become. And one of the aspects of this pantheon of gods is that they have lifetimes. They don't live forever. And so they live pretty long. The shortest lifespan of gods, is 9 million years. And that's short. And it goes on from there. You know, vast eons of time, their lifetimes. However, there's also the idea that one day for a god, one day and night for some of these gods, is equivalent to 50 human years. So somehow, I don't know how that does with time, but they have a kind of different time that they live in. So there is the idea notion of gods in Buddhism, and the role of the relationship of these gods in plural to Buddhism is that they're generally depicted as supporters of the Buddha, supporters of Buddhism. And sometimes in the time of the Buddha, they would be depicted as coming down and worshipping the Buddha, coming and asking him questions. And in some ways being spiritually on a lower plane than the Buddha. So sometimes we think of gods as being a higher spiritual plane. In Buddhism, even though they're higher cosmologically, in terms of spiritual development, they're much lower than enlightened people. And sometimes in Buddhism, there's a little bit of poking fun. The Buddha would poke a little bit of fun at the notion of these gods, some of these gods were a little bit arrogant, or some of the gods were a little bit foolish. And so there's little stories about these gods, kind of like the Zeus pantheon, Greek pantheon of gods, or some of them mischievous and all kinds of different things. So in that sense, even though the gods were kind of supportive of Buddhism, they're not really that centrally important for the enterprise of Buddhism, for the practice of Buddhist practice. Then, you know, you can easily do have Buddhist practice and Buddhist teachings without any reference to these gods from the earliest time in Buddhism. But you can't say there's no gods because there are these gods. Now, none of these gods, in the Buddhist understanding, were or are creator gods, the creator god. Buddhism doesn't believe that there was a being that created the universe. Rather, Buddhism believes that the universe has no beginning. That the beginning of the universe, more technically what the Buddha said, the beginning of the universe cannot be found, cannot be discerned. It's more or less understood to be that you can't find the beginning, just going on forever. Like you can't necessarily find the end of space, I suppose. And is that okay to say that? Kind of. Ask the physicist. I know there's some problems, but anyway, there's no beginning. What? What?
We don't know.
We don't know. That's what Buddha says. You can't know the beginning of. And but it certainly doesn't posit that it's a being that started it all, some god. However, at the time of the Buddha, there was some people who believed that there was such a god. And this god was called Brahma. And Brahma is in one of the more ethereal planes of god realms. And there's a lot of gods called Brahma, but some of them are more supreme than others. And the Buddha poked a little bit fun at Brahma at various times. And one of the ways he poked fun at it was to explain how Brahma came to the misunderstanding that he created the universe. And the misunderstanding occurred this way. There's no beginning to time, to creation. However, the Buddhist idea of cosmology is that, kind of like the yo-yo theory of the cosmos, that there is periods of expansion and contraction of the universe. During periods of intense contraction, all the living beings end up going kind of hanging out for a while in this the highest of the formless realms, these ethereal realms, where there's no bodies, just these kind of disembodied spirits. And then as the world expands again and takes form again, becomes solid again, the kind of whatever way the universe takes solidity, then after the Big Bang, then these beings, from this formless beings, they die up there, and they get reborn in these coarser realms. First they get born as gods, lower gods, and then lower gods, and finally they get born on the earth, and so forth. So after one of these periods of contraction, and the Big Bang happened, and it was time for these beings, these formless beings, to die and get reborn a little bit lower, the first one died. And it was reborn in Brahma's heaven as the firstborn is born as Brahma. And he's reborn in this Brahma heaven. It's already all made with Brahma's palace. It's a wonderful place. But there was no one else there. And so after a while, he got lonely. And a thought occurred to him. Boy, it'd be nice if there were some other people here, some other gods. Coincidentally, at that moment, another one of those formless gods died and was reborn in his entourage. And he thought, he took credit. I created that. And it turns out that Brahma, because he was the first one there, he had really good karma, so his lifespan was really, really long, much longer than the ones that followed him. So they died, you know, after a while, and he's still there, so like he must be pretty, you know, all-powerful and eternal and all these wonderful things. And then some of those who died in his realm ended up as humans. And some of those as humans could remember their past lives. And so they remember being in Brahma's entourage, where Brahma said, I'm eternal, I created the universe. And therefore, people believe that this Brahma created the universe, but it's all a misunderstanding. So, you know, who knows? You know, maybe he, you know. So, a little bit more, and the Buddha didn't really address too much the issue of theism or God or creator God. But he did say simple things like, if there was a God who created this world, this universe, he must have been a really bad guy. Because there's so much suffering. And if he was omnipotent and omniscient, and this is what he ended up creating, so much suffering in this world, he was, you know, must have been a bad person. So it was kind of like saying, there can't really be, there couldn't have been a God. And certainly we find in theology, theological circles, a tremendous exploration to try to deal with this issue of evil and suffering in this world, and how could a just God allow for this to happen, and why it's necessary. And it's a big quandary for, I think, people who believe in God. Another time, in the early Buddhist scriptures, when they're poking fun at Brahma, Brahma apparently was a little bit puffed up at times, and thought that he would go around saying, "I'm the all-knowing one, the great one, the greatest, the most superior, the most wonderful. I'm just the best." Well, one day, a Buddhist monk, went up to see Brahma to ask him a very profound question. In these Buddhist terms, it's profound. The question was, where do you find the end of earth, water, air, and fire? Earth, water, air, and fire are the four elements which makes up the experiential world, this world that we live in. So where do you come to the end of the world? And so he goes up and asks Brahma. And Brahma announces, "Oh, I'm the most wonderful and the most special and the most all-knowing and the greatest," and kind of. And the monk asks, "Oh, well, where's the end of the four elements?" And Brahma's response is, "I'm the most wonderful and the best and the greatest and the, you know everything." And the monk says, "But where is the end of the four elements?" "Oh, I am the best and the greatest and the most all-knowing and, you know." And then the monk asks again, and then Brahma says, "Come with me." He takes him aside and whispers to him, "Look, all these other gods in my entourage, they believe that I'm all-knowing and powerful and strong, and I don't know the answer to your question. So give me a break. Leave me alone. And what are you? You're a Buddhist monk. You shouldn't be coming to me. You should go to your teacher, the Buddha. He's the one who really knows the answer to that question. I don't know that answer." So the simple answer to the question of, you know, God, relationship of God to Buddhism, is that there are gods in the traditional teachings of Buddhism. Those gods have very little importance in terms of practice. They're there kind of in the background, but clearly there is no creator God. There's no belief in a creator God in Buddhism. So in that sense, you know, there's none. So then the question is, aside from the idea of a, you know, kind of a being as a god, is there something in Buddhism that points to a kind of principle or force or pervasive kind of reality in the world, which, you know, qualifies a god or is comparable to God? And in doing kind of interreligious dialogue, there have been Buddhists who have suggested that the number of Buddhist teachings or principles are comparable to the idea of God. So one of the most common one is the idea of Dharma. The Dharma is the same as God, or is the same, you know, the same as God. And so that begs the question, what is Dharma? The Dharma is seen as the principle of causality, of cause and effect, of interrelatedness, interconnectedness, that Buddhism puts such a big value on. And this Dharma, this principle, these patterns of cause and effect, unfold in a particular lawful ways, particular patterns that are so ultimate and have so much sense of intelligence to it in a kind of way that maybe some Buddhists would like to say, well, that's God. So that's one commonplace. People try to make a comparison. And, you know, there's a kind of a real need for sometimes to try to find a comparison, a common ground, because some people hold to their notion of God in very, very strong ways, very opinionated ways, where it's actually dangerous not to believe God when you're around them. So there are some countries in the world where there are Buddhists side by side with other people of other religions, where the other religions are actually kind of almost violent towards people who they think are atheistic. And if Buddhism sometimes has a reputation of being an atheistic religion or non-theistic religion, it's there's a lot of animosity that can exist. I traveled in one of these countries, and I was reluctant to tell people I was Buddhist, because they would tell things, they would say to me things like, atheists should be killed. And so, and Buddhism is atheist, they would say. So, okay, I'm not going to let people know that. So and sometimes it helps in certain countries to find some common ground where you can say, oh, yes, the Dharma is the same thing as God. And so we kind of have that belief as well. In the time of the Buddha, there were people who wanted to be reborn as Brahma, as a Brahma in the Brahma heavens. And they would ask the Buddha, how do we get reborn up there? What's the technique? What's the way, the path? And he would tell them that there was a path. And one of the characteristics of the Brahma realms, in the heavenly realms called the Brahma realms, where the Brahmas people live, gods live, is their states of mind are characterized as living in what's called the Brahma Viharas. And the Brahma Viharas are called the divine abodes. So their mind is suffused and pervaded with either loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, or equanimity. So it's very powerful states of mind. You imagine just kind of the hearts are just boundlessly full of love and all this. So when people ask the Buddha, how do I get reborn in these realms? He would teach them the path, the practice of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So do these meditation practices on love. And if you develop these meditation practices to a high degree, so that you're forces of defilement, all the forces of clinging and attachment in your heart fall away, even temporarily, because the love is so powerful. And there's nothing else that would characterize your heart, your mind, state of your mind, but love. Then when you die, you get reborn in that realm. So the Buddha taught them that practice. And this is how you do it. And it might have been a little bit of a kind of a, both in Buddha's point of view, maybe something that was actually possible, but also a little kind of redirecting. Rather than directing them towards focusing on God, he focused them in this lifetime here, becoming like a god, having love that's like this, these great gods. And then it becomes kind of irrelevant. Or it's kind of like the people who taught inner city gang kids, very violent kids, Aikido, in order to teach them how to be better killers. And by the time they went through a course of Aikido, the last thing they wanted to do was kill anybody. So, it's kind of like redirecting people to do this practice, this meditation practice, if you're interested in being reborn as a god. By the time you finish the meditation course, it doesn't really matter anymore. And so what we find is that here in the West, some people who will talk about a Buddhist divinity, the idea of a divine in Buddhism. And usually when I've heard people talk about the idea of the divine in Buddhism, they're talking about these four states of love. Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Because these four, they're called divine because they belong to the gods of these heavenly realms. And when we kind of suffuse ourselves in these states, we're kind of in comparable states to those gods, so it's kind of divine. So there's kind of an overlap with theistic kind of ideas, because we're talking about something divine in Buddhism. It's not seen to be ultimate. Liberation is ultimate. So from a Buddhist point of view, you don't want to stop there. You want to kind of be able to go beyond even, infinite love, even though it might seem pretty good. Partly because if you get reborn, if you have infinite love, you'll get reborn in these Brahma realms. And you'll live there for a lot of millions of years. But sooner or later, you'll die and come back. And so if you don't want to come back, or you want to kind of be free of the cycles of attachment, you want to step out of it. So we can understand that also here in this life, that as wonderful as divine love might feel, it's still a conditioned phenomenon. It's still a phenomenon that belongs to the conditioned impermanent world, and it has some instability to it. And if you want to discover something that's stable and lasting, you want to discover liberation, not love. So, I think in the West, if you look at the history of the notion of God, certainly, you know, God with big G, Creator God, back 3,000 years ago, whenever it began, it was a person, a being. And so there's been always, ever since then, I think, in the West, a very strong tendency to associate the word God with some kind of being. And it's, you know, the idea that we're made in God's image, or God's made in our image, exists there. So the idea of this guy with the white beard or whatever, you know, some idea of a being. And in that sense, religion in theistic circles tends to be, you could either call it God-centered, theocentered, theocentric, or you can call it anthropocentric, in the fact that the being kind of resembles a human being. But it's kind of as a person. And so a lot of Western religion or theistic religions, a big part of it is having a relationship with this thing called God. And so, you know, it's like a relationship you have with a person. And so some people have, you know, talk to God, God talks back. Some people love God, God loves them. Some people are quite devoted to God. Part of the great advantage of having a spirituality that involves a relationship to someone is that it's often much more captivating for our concentration than our breath. And so, people can have this tremendous love or commitment or put so much yearning and hope in the notion of God that they can really get focused on it. Buddhism, in distinction to that, perhaps could be called not theocentric, but dharma-centric, where there is a or reality-centric, perhaps, where rather than positing, you know, a creator who created the world, or a being that is omniscient and omnipresent and omnipotent, Buddhism, the center of Buddhism, is reality, or principles of reality, and the principles of cause and effect. So Buddhism focuses on the natural order, the natural cause and effect patterns of life, and that's what's at the center. Human beings are not at the center. A god is not at the center. What's at the center is the pattern of life, what's called the Dharma. And the relationship Buddhists have is to the Dharma, but the Dharma is not so personal. It's not like a being. So you can't have the same kind of personal give-and-take relationship as you can with a being. So it's a very different notion of spirituality, which some people find very strange, because many people in the West think that spirituality is about having a relationship with something outside of yourself, a greater power, some greater force than God. And the idea you wouldn't do that, wouldn't have that as your spirituality, it seems very strange. And what I started off last week was, maybe the reason why Jeff asked the question, was I distinguished between the beginning of the Bible, Genesis, where God is the beginning of it all, versus the beginning of, kind of the beginning of the Buddhist scriptures, where the emphasis is put on the mind. And it all starts with the mind. So Buddhism, in a sense, has a very different beginning point of practice. It's not focusing externally to a god, but it's focusing internally to the forces in our own mind that keep us in bondage to suffering or allow us to liberate. Then what happens when you start getting... So early Buddhism that IMC is kind of part of, there's this notion that I've been telling you now about gods. And the Buddha was clearly understood to be a human being. But not an ordinary human being. A radically a radically transformed human being. So much so that you can almost not call him a human, but he wasn't a god. You know, just he was called a liberated human being, an enlightened human being. And if you're interested, one day I can give you a talk that's on Buddhology, in contrast to theology, you know, the nature of a Buddha. But there was nothing exceptional, that required him to be supernatural or superhuman. As often happens in religious traditions, the Buddha, as the founder of Buddhism, slowly over the centuries, his stature became more and more aggrandized. He became, eventually he became deified. Some Buddhists wouldn't say that, but from practical points of view, he became like a god, and transcendent kind of eternal being who was omniscient and omnipotent and all kinds of qualities that you expect of a god. And there are Buddhists then who will pray to these notions of God. So Anne mentioned there's Amitabha Buddha, the Buddha of infinite light, which is a big part of Mahayana Buddhism. There is the medicine Buddha, which is very important in some schools of Mahayana Buddhism. And this more theistic idea of God belongs mostly in the Mahayana Buddhism. It's a big part of many forms of Mahayana Buddhism. And there's a whole pantheon of these gods. There's also a pantheon of bodhisattvas, which are not quite Buddhas. And they also are celestial. They're called, in scholarly circles, they're called celestial bodhisattvas. And from practical points of view, they're kind of like these, more than angels. They're more like, kind of gods who are floating around in heavenly realms, and they intervene and we pray to them, and, seems like gods. The Theravada tradition, or the early Buddhist tradition, doesn't believe in this kinds of Buddhas. They see it as being later myths that arose and developed over time. But it's there in certain Buddhist traditions, and very big Buddhist traditions. And because religions change and develop over time, shouldn't be a surprise for you to find out that there are some people who took these ideas of theistic kind of Buddhas and then at some point redefine them. And so you find in Japan, for example, this idea of Amida or Amitabha Buddha. Some people reinterpret him that it's not really a person. It's really the fundamental nature of reality or the Dharma, of liberated reality. And so it's the same as Nirvana, kind of, or the mind or the reality that's in touch with Nirvana. So they kind of try to kind of bring it back to the kind of similar ideas we had in early Buddhism, but it has this kind of this devotional slant, because even though they do that, it still kind of has the remnants of a person, of a being. And so people kind of worship and pray to this principle, this idea, or this reality that's there. And one of these schools of kind of theistic schools of Buddhism that's very popular in Japan and was the first form of Buddhism to really take root here in the West, in America, over 100 years ago, is called Pure Land Buddhism. And there's a beautiful temple on Lewis Street in Palo Alto that belongs to the Japanese Pure Land sect. And it's a pretty interesting tradition of Buddhism. It has some pretty sophisticated analysis, interpretation of what this Amida Buddha is. But one of the notions of this particular theistic form of Buddhism is a distinction between self-power and other power. And so self-power is a practice of liberation you do on your own. Other power is a practice of liberation that another power does for you. And so Amida Buddha is this other power. And so the belief in Pure Land Buddhism is that through history, we've kind of ended up in the degenerate age, where none of us can have any hope to practice anymore, do personal practice on our own. It was okay in the time of the Buddha, but that time is long gone. And so we can't do it for ourselves. But what we can do is we can rely on this Amida Buddha, the grace of Amida Buddha. And if you pray to him in a certain kind of way, express your faith and belief in him, then he will grant you his grace and you will somehow be saved. And so it's kind of, they've done away with the works practice and replaced it with grace. Now, have you heard this before somewhere? Salvation by grace, not by works. So it's kind of very similar to Lutheranism and some Protestant religions, the way it is in Japan. But and so in Zen, so they call themselves other power based, and Zen they call self power, because Zen you're sitting there doing it yourself. But as people kind of get into these two practices in a deep way, what they say is the notion of self and other falls away. And so at some point, these, you know, Zen and Pure Land Buddhism, the distinction between them falls away because it's kind of like two sides of the same coin or two kind of temporary distinctions that are used to find your way. Sometimes you say light is a wave, sometimes it's a particle. And so which is it? And at some point you're just happy the light's on. So at some point, this distinction between self-power and other power falls away because you're just happy that you're free. So, that's probably enough. So I saw some people leave, so I thought I would either bore people or irritate them. And the rest of you are polite. Hanging in here. So, is that okay? Yeah, so you have a little bit of sense of history and how it all fits. And I'm not really qualified to talk about much about God in kind of theistic kind of terms. I haven't studied that much. And what I have studied about it is mostly anthropological and how anthropologists have tried to make sense of it. Because, you know, no one wants an anthropologist to analyze their own belief in God. But when you see all the different ways that people believe in God through history and all over the world, it begs all kinds of anthropological questions. What are they doing, and what's the function, and how does it function, and you know, what's going on? So then I'll end where I was actually thinking of beginning, and I forgot. I wanted to say that the notion of God, the belief in God, is the focus for some people's deepest source of meaning, deepest source of value, deepest source of purpose in their life, and deepest source of hope. And so for some people, the understanding of God is so important that they'd rather die than give up their notion of God. It's so centrally important. And for some people, it's only through coming to some kind of notion of God that they cope with some of the greatest tragedies that befall a person in life. People who, I don't have to go through the list of terrible tragedies that befall people. And people struggle with a very tremendous tragedy, difficulty, crises in their lives. And somehow or other, it's the notion of God, something with God, that actually lifts them out of that or kind of provides a solution to their tremendous, painful, and challenging times. So I think to talk about God, I think it needs to be done with respect. And I don't know if I've done that well enough tonight because of the tremendous importance this notion has in people's lives. I don't want to belittle that importance and almost like the need that people have. But I think that it's very... I think the message of Buddhism is a very much needed one, I feel, in our society, because sometimes the theistic ideas of religion seem to be dominant. And especially in a time and place like nowadays, where religion is such a big part of political culture, political discussion, popular culture, I think that Buddhism has a very important role to stand up and say, look, we're religion too. And include us at the table. And here there's other ideas that here. There's other notions of what's centrally important in religion and, let's share the table together and let's be in dialogue rather than thinking that you can have a monopoly and just assume that this is the way it should be for everybody. So in that sense, I think Buddhism has an important role in society. So I did talk over my allotted time. Maybe I did that to be safe. so there couldn't be any questions. But if you do have questions or comments about this, you're welcome to come up here and talk to me now, and I'm happy to try to answer. So thank you.